Welcome to It's About Florida, a monthly discussion program tackling the key topics of interest to our state. I'm Lynn Hatter. Terrorism came to Florida this week in the form of a massacre at an Orlando area gay nightclub. At least 49 people are dead. Some are still fighting for their lives in hospitals. More than 50 others are wounded, and we'll hear some of their stories this evening. We'll also hear about some of the reaction to the shooting. That conversation ahead on It's About Florida.
When I finally saw an officer, I had my cell phone in my hand, and I started waving in delight so that he can see me. And at that point, the officers instructed me, it's like, you know, lift my hands, drop whatever I had in my hands. And they instructed me to drag myself toward them.
That was Angel Santiago, who was shot in the knee and foot. Patience Carter was among the hostages trapped inside of a bathroom at the club with the shooter. More than 40 patients flooded the Orlando Regional Medical Center. Medical staff there were pushed to the limit as they dealt with the onslaught of patients coming from the Pulse nightclub. WMFE health reporter Abe Abaraya was at a press conference where medical staff and patients recounted the events of early Sunday morning. And we should mention before we get started, some listeners may find the details in this report disturbing.
26-year-old Angel Cologne was with three friends that Saturday night into Sunday morning. They all survived, but when the shooting started, Cologne was shot three times in the leg and wasn't able to move. He was trampled by the crowd. And then, he says, the shooter began executing people who were wounded inside the club.
I look over and he shoots the girl next to me. And I'm just there laying down. I'm thinking, I'm next. I'm dead. So I don't know how, but by the glory of God, he shoots towards my head, but it hits my hand. And then he shoots me again, and it hits the side of my hip.
Cologne managed to stay calm for hours until police shot and killed the gunman. An officer found Angel Cologne alive on the floor, sitting in a wheelchair at a press conference. He says without the hospital staff, he wouldn't be alive.
And he grabs my hand and he's like, this is the only way that I can take you out. I'm like, please carry me because I'm in pain right now. Couldn't walk or anything. So he starts to drag me out across the street to the Wendy's. And I'm grateful for him, but the floor is just covered in glass.
Even though Orlando Regional Medical Center was just three blocks away, it wasn't easy getting Cologne and others there. Because the scene was unsafe, it was impossible to get EMS into the club, so the injured were taken to the hospital in the back of police pickup trucks and civilian cars, any way to get them there. Dr. Christopher Hunter is an associate director of Orange County's EMS system. He said emergency responders did minimal interventions to stop the bleeding and get them to the hospital.
But for that first burst of patients, because it was so close and because so many were coming out, it was just grab and go.
The medical staff at ORMC had no warning for what was coming, but they got existing patients out of the trauma ICU into other areas of the hospital and discharged as many patients as they could. And they diverted as many other emergency calls to other hospitals. And the hospital opened up six operating rooms with multiple surgeons working on one patient at a time. Doctors described walking out of one OR and into another to keep operating. In total, 28 surgeries the first night and 16 since. Dr. Joseph Ibrahim says they've had to bring patients back in for repeat surgeries.
We're seeing some things now with this high caliber rifle causing injury, soft tissue injury that we talk about that are causing some destruction and some of the tissues having issues now, so that now we have to go back and debride some of those wounds.
The hospital's brought in grief counselors for the staff as well. Dr. Chadwick Smith says he went to a grief counseling session for the hospital.
I shared with them how I was feeling. I was on call again last night, and I was walking out of the hospital. And walking out, I saw team members walking into work crying. And I just couldn't express how it's hard to describe how you feel.
Doctors say these were the kinds of injuries seen in a war, because of the type of rifle and how close the shooter was to his victim. They said if Pulse hadn't been three blocks away, many of these patients would not have made it to the hospital alive. I'm Abe Abaraya in Orlando.
That was WMFE reporter Abe Abaraya. One of the consequences of the shooting has been a focus on the role of faith, both as a motive and as a form of healing. For more on that, we look to WMFE's program, Friends Talking Faith, and a conversation between Imam Muhammad Mushri, Rabbi Steve Engel, Reverend Brian Fulwiter, and Reverend Kathy Schmidt.
But we have to separate religion from the actions of an individual. Right. You know, if an individual happened to be Muslim or Christian or Jew or Hindu or Buddhist, that doesn't mean the religion and all the adherents of that religion endorse or condone or support or approve of this.
Adolf Hitler grew up Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. And so nobody's saying, all Christians believe in Holocaust. You know, it's an absurd notion, isn't it? Rabbi, you were going to jump in.
It may be absurd, Rev, but I know that, you know, I want you to talk, Imam, about there is a backlash. There are people who now believe, here's another Muslim, quote, that went after people, it must be something about Islam that causes people to go and kill people.
Well,
and
the fact...
I'd like you...
Yes, Rabbi, I agree this is an issue because every time there is a mass shooting, if it happened to be carried out by a person with a Muslim name, then religion is brought into it. But there were over 100 mass shootings this year alone. And... over 10,000 mass shootings since 9/11. And the vast majority, less than 1% were done by individuals who are of the Muslim faith. But the majority were done by people who are mainstream, white, Christian. And the religion is not dragged in the mud because people understand that Christianity is not responsible for the action of a person who lost their mind. But when it comes to Islam, nobody wants to blame the killer. They want to blame the religion and blame, you know, all its adherents. And when they do that, they are really perpetrating this myth that Islam alone has this, evil gene, and we need to correct that.
Michael Farmer.
And I want to get...
Rabbi,
I'd like to get back to some.
Yeah.
Reverend Schmidt said, we've talked about guns as part of the problem, but she raised something that was really important about the current culture and climate. So yeah. I'd like to, Reverend Schmidt, to just
let's come back to that in just a second. Michael Farmer had a from Equality Floor had a response to what the imam was just talking about. So
I think it's so important for everyone in the LGBT community to understand that in this moment, what folks. What the people that perpetrate these awful acts want is for our communities to be divided. And the LGBT community and the Muslim community and all of the communities in Orlando, we need to stand together because the issue that we're dealing with here, the thing that has motivated this is not people of Muslim faith. It is the broader context in our society that allows this hate to flourish in all facets of our society.
Is that the dangerous mindset that the president talked about this afternoon?
Absolutely.
About one of these candidates for president who is spreading this kind of idea?
Absolutely. And yeah. As gay people, we know what that is like. And we just, as Equality Florida and LGBT people, we're standing with the Muslim community. And we will not be divided by people who spout that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. And I think the Muslim community, as I'm hearing the imam speak over and over again, is standing with the LGBTQ community, the Latina community, the whole community, and we're all standing together. I mean, I think that was the brilliance of the One Orlando hashtag, and it's saying we are not going to be divided by this. We are not going to be fearful of each other. We are going to stand with each other, continue to be there for each other, and that's how we're going to overcome this hate, through love and compassion and care for each other. Kathy Schmitz, Reverend Schmitz, the rabbi posed a question to you. Rabbi, do you want to say it again?
Well, I just wanted to, we have been talking a lot about the use of guns, but Reverend Schmitz also raised the idea that it's not only the weapon that a person has, but it's the reasons and the motivations that brings them there. And she had mentioned the sort of the culture that we have now in our country, which can lead to a lot of different things other than gun violence. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, this idea we're scapegoating people, the idea of the hatred and bigotry, right. This idea that is really motivating people and saying it's okay to now do some of these acts, and Reverend Schmitz brought it up, so well, I thought you might want to
I thought one of the most brilliant lines at the vigil last night was from Nadine Smith, the head of Equality Florida, who said the culture war is no longer metaphorical. Mm-hmm. And that just really sunk in for me, is we've known before these events that we were struggling for the soul of our nation. We are in a struggle for what kind of nation we want to be. Do we want to be the kind of nation that reaches out our hand to one another in support and solidarity at a time like this? Or do we want to be the type of nation that is broken apart and divided? And there are some people, I am baffled by what the motive is, what the vision of a world they want to live in, but they seem to want us to be divided by this. And it's a recipe for division when you look at, you know, when you tell the story of a shooting with the kinds of claims that were involved in a gay nightclub on a Latin night. I mean, it's a recipe for division. But what I've seen continually in the last 48 hours is that we're saying no to that. We're saying we will not be divided that way. The clergy, the religious and faith leaders in the community, as well as our civic leaders.
For more on our conversation, we turn to WMFE reporter Brendan Byrne. Brendan, welcome to It's About Florida. Thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me.
Anytime.
So I just want to get a quick lay of the land. Tell us what all has happened since Sunday, since news of this shooting broke.
We're still learning details about what happened. The Orlando police have been briefing the press, talking about what happened. We know for sure that there was a shooting between the shooter at the club about 2 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, and at about 5 o'clock in the morning, 3 hours later, SWAT breached an exterior wall to release hostages and get in a gunfight with the shooter. We don't know really what happened in between. We're starting to put the pieces together, looking at social media posts and witness statements as they're coming in, but we don't really have a good grasp of what's going on. Now, in the community has really stepped up and come together. There was a call for blood donation after, you know, the 50-some people that were in the hospital. Lines for blood donation wrapped around blocks. They were turning people away. Blood banks were reaching capacity. Folks, local businesses were donating food to the workers, the press that were out there, the first responders. They really just kind of stepped up and really helped out in this tragedy.
You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people are wondering, and you referenced it a little bit, is what may have happened when SWAT finally intervened. And we've seen some reports that are suggesting that maybe some of the people who were injured in this may have actually been injured or wounded or killed kind of at that point. What is law enforcement saying about that?
So Orlando Police Chief John Mina hasn't really commented about he said that they're looking. That is part of their investigation, but he has not released any details on that. He did say that when SWAT did make the breach, the backdrop of the shooter was concrete. That they weren't shooting into hostages at that point. We don't know how that investigation is going, how long that will take. But right now, the reports of so-called friendly fire are unconfirmed from us.
Gotcha. You know, as this goes on, what is still left to learn about the shooter? I know a lot there is a policy. Some people do hold it of whether or not, you know, to name him. For this show, I think that we're going to elect not to name him. But what do we know about him, his upbringing, and sort of what may have led to this attack on that nightclub on Pulse?
We're still getting details of his life. There's been plenty of reports about that. What we do know for sure is he was born in New York to Afghan parents. He spent some time in Stuart, Florida, as a kid, I believe in middle school. Lived in Fort Pierce. That's where he had his apartment. He had a wife previous and then was married with a second wife. And they were living in that apartment in Fort Pierce. But we're starting to get some more details on his social life. You know, there are some reports that he had been to that nightclub before. Now, that nightclub is a gay nightclub. There are some reports that he had interacted with folks in the gay community via a social media app to hook up. But, you know, when his wife spoke with reporters and AP, she said, you know, he didn't show any homosexual tendencies or anything like that. But they are looking into that. Now, it should be said that not all of the patrons at Pulse are homosexual, but it is a gay themed club. So we're starting to learn those details about him. He seemed conflicted in conversations with police during that hostage situation, pledging allegiance. Or I'm sorry, I've got to go back, Lynn.
Sure, go ahead.
The FBI did look into his look into allegations raised in 2013, I believe. Where folks thought that he was a threat, and he said, you know, that he had allegiance to two separate terrorist organizations that FBI investigators said would not be cooperative. They were both enemies, basically. So he seemed we're still kind of putting the details together, but it doesn't seem like a stable person.
You know, some of the conversations now have sort of shifted to those that we have seen after other mass shootings, this issue of the AR-15, the particular type of rifle that the gunman may have used and what to do about it. And we've heard now this kind of coming from both sides. There has been a call that Florida should reconsider looking at some of its gun laws. Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam was actually asked this particular question earlier in the week, and he sort of waffled on it a little bit. And here's what he had to say.
Does this act prompt the need for the state to review gun control laws? Anything from restricting the sale of guns to people on the no-fly list to an outright ban on assault weapons?
Well, a good bit of this information is still forthcoming in terms of how the individual obtained his firearms, but. For all of the reasons that he was not disqualified from receiving a security guard license, you have a U.S.-born citizen with a clean criminal record who has passed a mental health screening, who lawfully, all indications at this time are, lawfully purchased firearms from a licensed dealer, underwent a background check at the point of purchase, and waited 3 days to receive it. It would appear that all of the typical highly regarded controls on mental screening, criminal background, stability, and a lawful licensed firearms dealer were followed in this instance. You have a radicalized individual who, because of the depth of hate that I can't comprehend, chose to walk into a nightclub full of innocent people and open fire and result in the most horrific mass shooting casualty in the nation's history.
And you hear Putnam in that basically saying, you know, that all of the procedures for the gunman to purchase his weapons were followed according to state law. But I'm curious about, you know, what is that conversation like in Orlando? What are people saying about Florida's gun policies?
I think it's been quite reactionary at this point. There's been a call to ban assault style weapons, that like the one that was used in that shooting and other shootings across the nation. You know, the FBI did investigate him. They closed that investigation, so that wouldn't raise any red flags when he was going to get these security permits that he had for work or to purchase the gun. But yes, there has been a call to ban those assault-style weapons. There has been a call to look at our background policy. We have some local lawmakers here that we've spoken to that want to take that to the legislature in the next session, possibly a special session. There have been national lawmakers that have been doing making those calls, like Corinne Brown and Bill Nelson. So you can see that's been the reactionary thing. Now, will that progress? We will see. We do have a public affairs show here. We open the phone lines up to the community. Reactions were mixed. One of the callers that we had said, this was a gun-free zone. Had it not been a gun-free zone, responsible gun owners could have been able to step in and help out in the situation in the club. Now, hindsight is always 20/20, but reactions have been mixed here in the community with both lawmakers and citizens.
Gotcha. And, we were speaking earlier to Representative David Richardson. He's an openly gay Florida lawmaker, and he seemed to suggest that changes, especially from Florida's legislature, which is led by the GOP, would probably be highly unlikely. And here's what actually he told us about that.
Here's the reality. The reality is that in the Florida House of Representatives, the Democrats are clearly in a minority. The majority party will not hear the bills. We have 6 bill slots each that we can file. We're limited in the number of bills that we can file. The Senate, by the way, is unlimited, but we have 6 bill slots. So if I have 15 things that I need to work on, which ones do I think that I can advance in the minority party? Now, sometimes we file bills even though we know the majority party is not going to hear them, because the mere act of filing the bill will generate more conversation and more discussion and more debate, even if the debate would never happen in a committee hearing room. So I'm all about being strategic and deliberate in the way that I accomplish work for my constituents and for Floridians. And so if I believe that there's a way to advance gun restrictions through filing a bill, I will certainly do that. And if I think that there is a way to effect change in a more successful way, then I'll take that road.
And that was Representative David Richardson. Another issue that I have been wondering about, and I'm wondering if there's any conversation about this at all, is Orlando as a major tourist destination. I've heard it said that when people come and visit the U.S., they want to go to New York, they want to go to California, and they want to go to Disney World. And I'm wondering, if anybody has actually talked about that with respect to this incident.
We asked our mayor, Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer, about that. We are a city that really its bedrock is that tourism industry. And we asked, is Orlando still open for business? And he said, absolutely. Just anecdotally, one of our reporters, she was out of town when the news broke, so she flew back, and she's on her phone, checking up in emails and tweets and all of this stuff, and she's just engrossing herself in this tragedy. And the kids that were getting off the plane were super excited to be in Florida. They were going to Disney, so you can see that sometimes that. Disney can be a big the tourism industry can be a big draw. Going back to when you think about security or talking about security, Disney had the parks had already instilled a metal detector policy recently. Universal had been stepping up security as well. I'm an annual pass holder to Disney. Last time I went, I had to go through a metal detector and a pat down to go in. And there is talks to continue to ramp up security there as well. But I really think that you really can't take the tourism draw out of this area. It's so big, and I think it'll continue to be big.
What has the cultural conversation started to be like? I know you all earlier this week aired a special called Friends Talking Faith, and that was carried on multiple public radio stations, including WFSU here in Tallahassee. What made you all decide to go forth with a conversation like that? I think you had a local imam and a local pastor. Why tackle it from that, and why do it in that sort of town hall format?
The folks that are on Friends Talking Faith, they're a staple of this community. It's a reverend, an imam, and a rabbi, and they, you know, lead very large congregations. And I think that, you know, faith is where everyone really goes to when there's uncertainty. And I think that having those folks really talk about it, you know, how do you address your congregation when something terrible like this happens? What's, you know, particularly important about having, you know, all three faiths there is we have our Imam Muhammad Masri, who is a Muslim, and he has been very outspoken because the shooter was Muslim and declared his allegiance to ISIS. So to have him on there and kind of say this is not what the religion is, to kind of ease those tensions, you know, there are those tensions here in our community before and after, as I'm sure there are in every other community after an act like this happens. So to have that voice coming out and saying this is not all of us aren't like this. What was really interesting is that at the vigil on Monday night, there was a huge gay community, obviously, came out to this vigil of thousands of people in our downtown core business district. But there was also an outpouring of Muslims that came out to support the LGBT community. And it was really great to see those two communities coming together, you know, in our downtown, in the heart of our city, to kind of be there and support each other and say, hey, we've got your back. It was really, really an impressive thing to see.
You know, this shooting, I feel, is a bit different from a lot of others in that you have now, I think, what some would say, two marginalized communities that have been affected, the LGBT community for the victims, but also the Muslim community, because that community has been, I guess, so affected by terrorism, really, in recent times. Your talk, though, also brought in, I think, something else, which is the sort of backlash that this is having on really conservative Christian organizations, where we've seen some people who are saying, you know, we don't want your sympathy. You know, you have, you know, with respect to Christian conservatives, really kind of pushed against gay rights in recent years. And it just seems like this incident is kind of bringing together all of that.
Yeah, no, I think you put it together, or you put it quite simply there. It really is bringing all of those communities together, and you know, from the outpouring of support that I've seen on social media, that I'm seeing at these vigils that are coming together, talking to people in the community, is that everyone is really here to help in our community. I can really only speak for our community, It seems like the folks here in Orlando say, you know what, it doesn't matter, gay, straight, whatever your religion is, we are one city, we're coming together, and we're going to help each other through this.
Well, we thank you so much for taking the time out to join us today on It's About Florida, and we will continue following this story, as we know that you all will.
Thank you, Lynn. My pleasure.
Thanks to NPR member station WMFE 90.7 in Orlando. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussions on the issues impacting our state.